Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 243 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is October 22nd, 2012. Got a big show for you this week on the Peristyle Podcast following USC's 50-6 thumping of the Colorado Buffaloes. We got a lot of questions to get to. We have Dan Weber coming up a little bit later on in the show. He's the USCFootball.com beat writer. We'll have Coach Harvey Hyde in the first segment, sharing his thoughts on what happened in the game. We got a lot of questions, like I said. If you have any questions or comments for us, drop us an email. podcast@uscfootball.com is our email address. Or you can leave us a voicemail two different ways. Call 206-888-6755. Leave a brief voicemail and we will play it on the air. Or you can go right to peristylepodcast.com and leave us a voicemail there. And like I said, we have Coach Harvey Hyde in the first segment. We got him. I think he's back in LA. I don't think he's in Vegas or Catalina or anything like that. What's up, Coach? How you doing?
Well, I'm in LA. I'm doing great. I'm looking maybe forward to a little rain here at the beginning of the week, but it was a great weekend. Congratulations to the Trojans. I think the Colorado game came at a perfect time. Before a home crowd, records were broken, a nice feeling, players were smiling. It's good feeling, good attitude, confidence builder, always things to work on, though, to get better. Did we get better during the Colorado game? These are the questions as far as coaches are talking about. The penalty situation, they've got to work on that. I'd like to comment on that somewhere during the show.
Sure.
And then, of course, you know, the Walker situation, it looks as though he's going to be all right. I mentioned yesterday on our Trojan Brunch show, it didn't look serious to me, and I'm glad it wasn't. The Hayward situation, he's gone for the year. I guess he had ankle surgery. And Buchanan, I guess he's going to be gone for the year, too. So this happens in the game of football, and other people step up. Other people got to be ready to play. But congratulations to the entire USC football team. Two records were set, many different types of those two records. We don't want to get into all of that. But it doesn't happen without a team effort, and it came at a perfect time before we now get into murderous stretch where you're going to find out who we are and who they are, because this next week's game is a must game for both teams. Both teams, because SC's got to win this game, because if they don't, they've got two losses in the Southern Division, and it would be difficult for them to get to the championship game. Arizona State only has one loss in the Southern Division, which would mean you'd have to have Arizona beat Arizona State, and all these different things have to happen. So the Trojans are in control of their own destiny. They're in control of their own destiny. They could even lose to Oregon and still get in the championship game and still go to the Rose Bowl or whatever. But you got to play them one at a time. And, Ryan, I'm sorry I was so long on this opening, but I think we need to congratulate the team a little bit. You know, it's great to see the kids not hanging their heads but happy about reading the paper on Sunday morning and walking out of the locker room and seeing their parents and girlfriends and going out to dinner, not worrying about what people are thinking.
I think you're right, Coach. And before we jump into all that, just wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. USC goes on the road this weekend, but comes back and plays a whole bunch of games in LA, the remaining games on the schedule. So if you need tickets, you can go to sctickets.com. Three of them in the Coliseum, and I think there's one over there in the Rose Bowl, USC's other home game. But sctickets.com or call 1-800-888-7287 if you need tickets for any of the remaining USC games or anything else, any other sporting event or concert theater. You can go to sctickets.com. And Coach, you mentioned the mood, and I think it wasn't just important for the fans, but I think it was, I mean, for the team, but it was also important for the fans having a good feeling at a home game where it wasn't like you scored some points in the first half and then kind of it just petered out in the second half. It was fun to see you know, Matt Barkley break the record, Robert Woods break the record, the video tribute I think the fans had a lot of fun with, and then seeing some of the backups come in and Max Wittick throwing a touchdown pass and Cody Kessler completing a pass. I mean, I think it was just fun for everyone, and it was a good feeling coming after that game where even some of the wins previously, Coach, they didn't have that kind of good feeling, but it seemed like psychologically it was good for the team and for the fans, for the whole program.
It was good for the broadcasters. Don't forget us and the media. It was nice to be able to relax a little bit and not bite your nails all the way to the end of the game. If you're an SC fan, of course, if you're a football fan out there, you'd like to see the best team win. But it was a great feeling, and I enjoyed it. I think people enjoyed it. Of course, you're always trying to critique. Did we get better? Did we need to do different things? Are we going to be ready for Arizona? Arizona, a very powerful team at this time, a very dangerous team at this time. Not just Arizona, but all of them, but you got to play one game at a time. I think it was just great timing. It was family day, so mostly all the families were there, of all the players and students, and it was just a great day. Yet, a very satisfying win, let's put it that way. Gained a lot of confidence, and it's now time to move on. You can't celebrate any longer. They forgot about that game. You forget about that game Sunday morning. When you come in as a coach and you start looking at the videos and players come in today to look at the game and move on, that game is history. Anything you did in that game is over with. It's time now to work on the Wildcats.
Certainly, Coach. And you mentioned the penalty situation. I guess if there's one issue that USC can take away from this, and Lane Kiffin devoted his entire halftime speech to the penalties, 10 penalties in this game. It wasn't a perfect game, you know, 50-6. There's a lot that went right, but you wanted to comment on the penalties, I guess. I'll let you do that here.
Well, I do want to comment on them. And, you know, when he brought the team together at halftime, I wasn't sure if he was talking about the penalties, but I thought he was talking about two more about, hey, guys, now we played a good first half. We've been criticized, and we know we haven't played well in the second half. It's time now to go in. Let's get it done for 20 minutes. Let's come out here and play like we did in the first half to second half. I thought he was giving them that talk. That's probably what I would have done at that time. The penalty issue, I don't know if I'd addressed it then, but I would have addressed it. And, you know, a couple of things I want to mention on the penalties. We've talked about this a lot, but I just want to take one incident. That's all I want to do. Yes, they were penalized, 10 penalties for 90 yards. They lead the nation in penalties, all that. Okay. If you have a team good enough to overcome that, fine. If you don't, though, when you get into big games like the games to come, you can't have those type of penalties. So let's don't talk about that. I want to address the Leonard Williams penalty. Read an article in the Times yesterday morning where someone was writing a column, and you all know who it is, but I don't want to just say, if you read the Times, who it was, because I don't like to do that. But this individual has never played football. This individual doesn't know what the game of football is about. This individual is quick to say what Leonard Williams did. Now, I'm not saying it was justifiable, but what he did should go to the commissioner's office, which it is, and the commissioner should decide if he should be suspended for a game or a half a game or whatever. First of all, I don't think anything should happen to Leonard Williams. What I mean by that, what he did was completely wrong. If someone did spit in his face, that's a natural reaction that any person would do on the street or anywhere. Should he have done that? No. But it's an emotional reaction. Do you ever blow your horn at a car on the freeway when someone cuts you off? Do you think about blowing it first, or do you blow it? I don't know. I normally blow my horn if a guy is coming into my lane. Well, that was a reaction. Now, he was penalized. The team was penalized. And he was tossed off out of the game and removed from the field. Now, I think it becomes a coach's situation now. The coaches deal with Leonard Williams on what they want to do. He's a great kid. He's a great player. And we're getting now into the meat of the schedule. And should he be suspended? A lot of you out there probably say he should be. He should be thrown off the team, whatever. Fine. But you're not the coach and you're not Leonard Williams. And he's a great kid. I'm saying the commissioner to mind about what he's doing, not be Roger Goodell. Worry about getting Pac-12 Network on DirecTV, would you? Or doing things like that. don't worry about team issues. So I would think that Coach Kiffin and his staff would handle that with Leonard Williams and not take it to a level where this kid is suspended. I'm just saying that. Now, I'm a player's coach, so I'm going to support my players, and I'm going to discipline my players, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that with my players. But I don't want someone to tell me that I have to sit this kid down when he's already embarrassed. He's already been thrown out of the game. We've already been penalized. And now when someone in his career, he's going to take a half away or a game away from him for that. I just don't buy that. People can argue with me. I know it hurt the team, but you move on. And that's my statement.
All right. So that's pretty clear, Coach. How are you feeling going on with that? We'll see what Lane Kiffin does this week to try to address the overall penalty situation. Well, like you said, 10 more penalties is unacceptable. Let's go to, we have a question from Earl in West LA, and he says, I know many traditional thinkers on the subject probably concerned that Silas Redd and Curtis McNeil only carried the ball three times against Colorado. But in spite of the criticism, the last 2.5 years, Lane Kiffin has proven himself to be a pretty smart coach. I'm guessing since Kiffin knew they would beat Colorado, he was keeping his backs fresh for Arizona, a game that is a must-win for USC and require controlling the ball to keep an explosive Wildcat offense off the field. What do you think about maybe saving some of those running backs, Coach, heading into the Arizona game?
Well, personally, I don't think you save anybody. When you go to war, you normally use the Air Force, the Army, the Marines, the Navy, the whole thing. And you utilize it where you can be successful and you can win the battles and end up winning the war. I don't think you're going to any game saying, oh, we're not going to run and we're going to save our backs or whatever. I think that, believe me, I'm with no negativism in this, but I want to say I would think that going into a game like Colorado, yes, it's important to set records, but, you know, we all understand Colorado. In fact, in the pregame show, I said USC would cover, and everybody said, hey, Coach, what are you talking about? I said, they will beat Colorado by more than 40 points. That this team is a team that you use to get better in all facets of your game. Records are great, but records come with victories. And I think it's great to be smiling and having fun. But do you think the backs are really happy today? Do you think the running game got better on Saturday? The passing game looked great. I think that when you have an opportunity to utilize all of your forces and to get better, I think if they had 23 rushes in the game, 10 of them were by DJ Morgan. I think McNeil carried the ball three times, Red maybe once or twice, and caught a pass. I think you're not utilizing and getting your timing with the backs and the line and your running offense in tune. They've got to see that under live fire, not just in practice, because you're not hitting that much in practice right now. And the backs have got to gain the same type of confidence with their offensive line as the receivers are gaining with the quarterback and the passing routes. So, yes, it was great to be able to set records, but I think also you could have benefited your running game a little bit more, as they did in the last part of the game with DJ Morgan. By the way, I thought he looked very good. He's going to be a great back in the future, and I liked him stretching the field towards the end of the game. Earlier in the game, they only ran the toss once or twice. In fact, in the first quarter, I think they only ran the ball one time. One time, you started off winging the ball and letting it fly and having success. You scored 2 touchdowns in the first 2 minutes or 50 seconds, I think it was. I don't remember what it was. First touchdown in 50 seconds, then you got a fumble and you scored another one. But I think you've got to utilize all facets of your game to be able to be better. So I think that you don't save things. You like to think that's a reason. If that's his reason, that's great. Then he did what he wanted to do. He won, he accomplished his goal, but I always come into a game, like I said last week, I want to look at it as a coach on Sunday morning. I come in, did we get better in all areas? Did we get better in the kicking game? Did we get better in the passing? Did we get better in our rushing game? Were we better as a football team? And I think that's what you have to work on in order to get ready for what's coming up, because you won't have that opportunity against a lot of these teams you're going to play. Now, Arizona's given up a lot of points. So I don't know if it's going to be a scoring race or not, but I know they scored 48 points on Stanford, and I know they lost to them in overtime. So I know they scored a lot of points this year, so, and they've given up a lot of points. So you're going to have to have your arsenal ready and be prepared for what could be, I don't know what's going to happen, a shootout.
It could be, Coach. And speaking of Arizona, we did get a couple questions on that and comparing the Arizona offense to what you see played up in Eugene at Oregon. Both Melvin and JJB wrote in pretty much the same question talking about the Arizona game. Said maybe I'm wrong, but the Arizona offense looks quite a bit like the Oregon offense. Is that an advantage for a defense? It's almost as if you're preparing defensively for Oregon a week earlier without actually looking ahead to Oregon. Do you see any similarities there, Coach? And is that an advantage for this USC team?
Well, that's going to be an advantage. It's going to be an advantage to see them before you see Oregon. I don't know if it's an advantage to see those offenses anytime. I mean, they're really outstanding. In fact, the rest of the year, except for Notre Dame, they all run the same stuff. Basically, almost the same stuff. Arizona State, Arizona, UCLA, Notre Dame runs a different type of offense. You know, you're going to see this hurry-up type of offense, spread, wildcat, play-action pass, hit quick dive plays. You're going to see this. So I think, and I think Arizona does it very well. Rich Rodriguez brings a lot of nastiness to that offense, too. I'm not quite sure where they are nationally, but I think they've been averaging 458 yards a game. I think they're the fifth top offensive football team in the country. So it's going to be a real effort to slow them down. They're very similar to Oregon. In fact, you know, when you look at this, it's really funny. They play Oregon up there, and they got to beat 49-0. But they drove down the field, and that's what happens in close big when games play. They had turnovers. Turnovers make the difference in football games when great teams play. They had turnovers up there, and it looked as though they got spanked real bad, 49-0. But in the first quarter and first half, they drove the ball pretty good against Oregon. So, I think it's going to be a real battle, and it certainly is going to help SC before Oregon. But I think what you got to worry about before Oregon is Arizona.
Yeah, you don't want to look ahead. It's certainly a losable game out there in the desert, so we'll see what happens there. This question came in, Coach, before the Colorado game, but I think it still applies. It's about third downs, and just for the record, USC, I believe, finished 2 out of 6 third downs in the Colorado game. Not a whole lot of third downs. Matt Barkley only faced 2 and converted 1, so it wasn't really a third down factor in this last game, but I think this still applies to this USC team going forward.
Oh, I agree. There's some
JD from D.C., this is a question for Coach Hyde. Coach Hyde, looking at our woeful third down efficiency, like less than 20% and ranked, 110th in the nation among D1 schools? I'm not sure how much lower you can go. Doesn't this inevitably have to fall on the play calling and therefore the people who are calling the plays? I mean, how can you not draw that conclusion, particularly with the skill players and the talent we have on this team? How can the offensive coordinator of this team escape criticism for that statistic? Fight on.
And thank you for your call. I think it falls on the team. You know, a lot of times you have drop balls. A lot of times you have penalties. A lot of times you put yourself in a position when you have third and long, which they've had a lot of. You don't stay on schedule because you're stopping yourself. And again, of course, you're calling some plays that shouldn't be called, and maybe you could call a curl route to the tight end. If you watch the NFL on third down and fives and 5 and 8 yards to go, they're throwing that curl route to the slot, they're throwing the curl out to the tight end and different things. So yes, a lot of it is contributed by play calling, but a lot of it also is contributed to penalties, a lot of it's contributed to drop passes, a lot of it's contributed to different things. You're not gonna beat great teams if you can't convert on third down. this past weekend, there were only two punts in the entire game. Colorado punted once, and SC punted once. So there wasn't a lot of third down conversions in the whole game when you consider that. There was a lot of turnovers to hook the ball away. I thought possibly that Colorado, I thought they had a great game plan in against SC. They moved the football against USC's defense, with kids that weren't great athletes, but I thought they had their game plan was really a good game plan. They stopped themselves. They really stopped themselves. So third down conversions are so important, but you got to put yourself in a position, too, where you have an opportunity to stop or to convert a third down. You can't always be third and 17s and convert a third down, but you got to stay on schedule. It's got to be third down and 5. Got to be third down and 2. Can't be always third down and 10 or 12 because you've had 2 incomplete passes or whatever, no gain. So I think third down conversions are really important, but there's a lot of reasons that contribute to what SC has done. I don't know. They were 2 of 6 before that. I forget what they were, but they were ranked low in the nation as far as third down conversions. And if you're going to be great teams, I'm going to tell you that right now, that ain't going to happen. You're going to lose.
All right, let's go to Mark. We got a couple more for you. Coach, before we let you go, Mark's a little critical of you, Coach. He doesn't like how critical you've been of Lane Kiffin, so we'll read what his question is and you can respond. He says,
"Great."
Lane Kiffin was 10-2 last year and 5-1 this year. This was sent in before the Colorado game. He's actually 6-1 now. Or 15-3. For the last season and a half. But if you listen to Coach Harvey Hyde each week, you would think he's 3-15 over that same period of time. Kiffin is playing with less than 70 players versus 85. He played 4 of 6 on the road, gone coast to coast. Doesn't he think that his expectations are too high? I doubt he ever went 15-3 at UNLV with playing 20% fewer players. So Mark doesn't like your criticism, Coach. Maybe you can respond to him.
Hey, Mark, mine are just opinions, okay? I try to be objectively. I try to do this not as a homer of the show. I try to do it as a real football fan like yourself, Mark, and others want to hear what my opinion is. I am not critical, overly critical, unless there's a reason to be. He has done a great job at USC. In fact, at media day, I went up to Coach Kiffin in front of T.J. Simers, and he was interviewing Lane, and I said, excuse me for a minute. I said, T.J., hasn't he done a great job at USC? T.J. stopped and looked at me, and I said, by the way, my name's Harvey Hyde. He says, I know who you are. Lane Kiffin looked over at me, gave me a wink, and the next day they wrote a positive article on Lane Kiffin. I like Lane Kiffin. In fact, every game at home on the pregame show when he walks in front of, on the Trojan Walk, when he walks in front of the ESPN broadcast stand where I stand, I mention him and he gives me the fight on sign. He knows that I don't even know if he listens, okay? But he knows that if I am critical, it's not personal. And I have a great relationship with him. And a great relationship with the entire coaching staff. I respect them. I was a coach. Everything is never, ever perfect. But I think, too, I owe something to our listeners to say, okay, it's Sunday morning. This is what I see. And this is what I think should happen. I think every one of you out there feel as I do. You'd like to see a perfect game, a perfect score, a perfect everything, but that never happens. You all know the perfect things. I could sit down and you guys could send me in and say, wasn't that a great pass? And I'd say it certainly was. And by the way, let me tell you this now. Matt Barkley had a great day, 19 of 20 with one drop. And those weren't easy passes, guys. Those had to be perfect passes right in there, a foot either way on some of these passes, and they would have been incomplete. So I can tell you all the good things. If you want me to do that, I'll do that, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to tell you honestly how I feel. And if I do upset a lot of our listeners, I apologize. But I think you'd rather have me be honest and disagree with me and think he doesn't know what he's talking about than to try to smokescreen it. And I think that's why I like doing this, because I have this opportunity to talk to all of you the way it really is. And by the way, 15-3, yeah, well, I had one season. In fact, they put our team in the Hall of Fame 2 weekends ago. We were 11-2. And I've had some good seasons. We won 4 national championships in junior college. And I didn't do that. The team did that. My coaches did that. I had great, great coaches and great, great players. And I was so fortunate that they were able to do that. Now, that's the way I answer that question.
Yeah, Coach, and just to come to your defense a little bit too, I think a lot of what we talk about ends up being questions that are sent in. So if you guys ask a lot of questions about, well, why is the third down conversion bad, or why is this, or why is that, I mean, you're going to get answers. And I think Dan Weber and Coach Harvey Hyde do a really good job of sharing what their thoughts are and coming from different perspectives. You know, Coach has done this before. He's been out there and done it. So I think you get a unique perspective from talking to someone like that. But a lot of what we talk about, I mean, 90% of what we talk about is driven by questions that are sent in from all the listeners. And I think a lot of times when they're frustrated, even after wins, that's what we end up talking about. And then, you know, Coach doesn't really have much of a choice. I mean, he could pump, yeah. he could be a sunshine pumper, but I don't think that's what you want.
No. Mark, I want you to keep listening too, okay? And I'd like you to call in and ask me a question. We'd like to, and do it by telephone, because I'd like to meet you. And if you come to one of the games, I'd love to talk to you there about it.
All right, Coach, thanks for that. We got one last one, and this, I think you'll love this one, Coach. It's from Chris Davis, 1965 USC alumni. He's talking about the podcast from October 15th, last week's podcast. And just so people remember, that was a game where USC pretty much ran the ball almost exclusively and didn't throw the ball that much. Unlike this last game, the Colorado game, where USC threw the ball over the field, really didn't run the ball much. But Chris says, as a blocking dummy from 1962 to 1965 and a lifetime Trojan a football alumni member, I can remember John McKay saying that with a pass play, only 3 things can happen, 2 of which are bad, incomplete or interception. And we had Bill Nelson and Pete Bethard as our quarterbacks. Not too bad. And that's from Chris Davis, again, 1965 USC alumni.
And I remember him saying that. John McKay, great guy, great coach. I really respected him. He's one of my idols. And that's right. What he says is true. He didn't really throw the ball a lot. When they did throw it, they were very successful. They had great receivers. They lined up and just pounded you to death. And they did it darn good. That's when USC was called Tailback U. And had that reputation for many, many years, and now it's still Tailback U, don't get me wrong. But also, they've now thrown the ball more than they have in the past. But, you know, everyone is. Everyone is forced to, because they high-powered offenses that are out there that, you know, Alabama just plays great, great defense and a very conservative offense, but just pounds you to death and gets field position and never makes a mistake or... And that's why they're real good. So, yeah, I remember that. And you're our USC Rudy.
I don't know. Yeah, see, he was a tackling dummy. That's got to be a tough job, Coach, especially back then. Man, I would think that would be rough.
I know how tough it is, because I used to have kids do that. It's not. He used to remember when they used to say, give us some linemen, or give us a defensive back, or give me a fullback. And the guy would say, oh, gosh, here we go again. The guy would go up to the drill at 6 foot, and he'd leave the drill at 5'10".
Good stuff. Well, thanks for sending in that question and comment, I guess you could say. And, Coach, thank you for coming on the show and sharing all your insights, positive, negative. We get the whole 9 yards. I think next week a little bit more interesting, going on the road to Arizona, last big road trip. Last big road test, outside of Los Angeles. So it should be interesting.
And thank you. And thank all of our listeners out there, because without you, we wouldn't have a show. I enjoy very much answering the questions to all of you, for all of you out there. And as I told you earlier, you know, it's just my opinion. Everyone's got one. Thanks, Ryan.
Oh, no, thank you, Coach, and everyone else. Hey, back in 30 seconds, we're going to get Dan Weber on the line. You'll talk to him about some USC football questions as well. Beating Colorado and heading into the Arizona game. So stay tuned, 30 seconds away.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast talking USC football. And we got Dan Weber. He is the beat writer for USCfootball.com. What's going on, Dan? How are you?
Doing good. Doing significantly better. And not just after Saturday. It's interesting. People were saying, you know, and you get emails from people said, boy, did you enjoy Saturday? I said, you know what? Actually, I enjoyed Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday because they practiced like they played Saturday those 3 days. So those were about the most enjoyable days of practice all year because basically they practiced quick and hard and, you know, throwing the ball, getting ready for this game. So I enjoyed the practices a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to see them actually practice similar to way they came out and play. Like sometimes we've seen it work the opposite if it was a great week of practice and didn't play all that well, but it kind of worked a lot better this week.
Yeah, I mean, you could really tell. They loved going hard, going fast, getting in. I mean, there were days I think they got three times as many plays in, as we had seen in you know, some of the practice weeks. And yet, what was so interesting, they get to the game, they play fast, score a lot of points, you know, complete a lot of passes, play almost perfect, and yet they only ran 48 plays the whole day, which is just, you know, by far the, you know, the fewest of the year. And we had been kind of not real happy with the fact that they were down to, you know, the mid-60s and the, you know, had per game in running plays, and that was the lowest in the Pac-12. And here they come out on a 48-play day, and the offense just goes crazy. So, you never know, but I guess if your quarterback completes 19 of 20 and the 20th is right in the guy, you know, somebody's hands and just isn't caught and has a perfect day, you're probably going to feel pretty good about your offense, especially if you're throwing the ball down the field.
Yeah, there were a lot of, I guess you could say, normally low percentage passes, and Robert Woods or Marquise Lee would make great catches. Not that the throws were there too, but there were plays that looked like the coverage was pretty good. But the USC quarterback, the USC receivers, just they made a better play than what the Colorado defenders could make.
Yeah, I mean, I think they made they went out and played their game. I know, you know, they thought the matchups were good. They thought, you know, Colorado, unlike a lot of teams, is going to come up and probably play us man-to-man. And if we have, you know, we come out with the three wide receivers in the game, they're going to probably have to play nickel, and that's going to give us a lot of good matchups against their personnel. So you don't want to overstate the matchup thing first, you know, and foremost, and because you'd like to be able to see USC do that kind of independent of exactly what the matchups are, just because you would like to see other teams have to match up to Robert and Marquise and Xavier Grimble. I mean, it was just great to see that, you know, bootleg rollout play in the end zone, you know, to Xavier in the end zone. You thought, oh, yeah, that's how they used to do it. Okay, that looks good. You know, it just, you think, kind of like that. You've almost forgotten. It's one of those things you say, wow, that Robert Woods is really good. You know? Because last week, I mean, after the Washington game, Robert was talking about, well, last year when I used to be able to, you know, last year, well, it's nice when you can talk about this year.
Right.
So that was fun.
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of questions to get to, so we'll try to jump into some of these. Tarion had a question, and I like this one, Dan, because if you watched USC senior safety Drew McAllister, we put up a story of him Saturday morning, and I'd like to say we gave him some good karma. He made a really nice interception.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, interception in the end zone, recovered a fumble, made a big hit, and then defended a pass on a halfback option, I guess, play, you could say, where he jumped in the air and batted the ball away. It would have been a touchdown.
Pensacola, yeah. Just terrific game. I mean, he's always been such a smart kid, and he's been knocked down. I mean, we always think if somebody on the practice field is laid out on the offense, you always look around to see where is Drew McAllister, because he's got that really quick pop, you know, and he's just – you know, if he could have ever been really healthy the whole time, he's always where the ball is. You just gotta love everything about Drew McAllister. And what you also like is they figured out a way to run some three safety stuff now that gets him on the field even more. And they've been getting him out there some, for Juwanza, where they they were doing a lot more rotating. So good for them. I think they've really done some nice things with the defensive packaging.
Yeah, Terry, and his question on that was there any indication from last week's practice that he was going to be used more Saturday? Did you feel that at all?
I thought the rotation, yes, the wholesale substituting on some plays, that was interesting. I think I counted 7 subs, like between second and third down. And I thought, wow, okay, I don't know if I've ever seen that. And Drew said that he knew also the rotating. I don't even think he was ready, and they were all completely ready for how much personnel, shifting and switching they would do. And that's a really good sign. I mean, the more guys they think they've got ready to play, I mean, they aren't going to play you. That's the one thing about this staff. If they don't have confidence in you, you're not getting on the field. So, it's a kind of a neat thing when you see 7 new guys running out there in the middle of a possession. Pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good, and I'm glad we could. Drew's a great guy, so I'm glad he had a big game. We did there's a video interview with him up on uscfootball.com too, and that story we wrote Saturday morning, you can still see that up on the site. There's a couple questions on George Farmer, and I don't know a lot of people couldn't watch the game, Dan, but he did get a carry.
Yeah.
Late in the game. And then they also, Max Wittig threw a pass a little behind him. He could have caught it, but he didn't end up catching him. But Percy and Joe both had George Farmer questions. Joe wanted to know, is it time for Farmer to move back to the backfield to give us more speed in that at that position? He says, we have all these weapons, why not use them? And then Percy said, forgive me for being sour during a Kiffin blowout, but I have no idea why he put so much effort recruiting guys like George Farmer, who was a 5-star kid coming out of high school. He did not have a catch, even in garbage time. Please divulge what you can explain and why it seems to be that he's in the doghouse, or is he just overrated when he was recruited? So some George Farmer questions for you, Dan.
Well, George got a lot of action. I mean, this is the kind of stuff we can't talk about before the game. He got a lot of work in practice, a lot of game stuff. He seems to be not unhappy with, maybe you would say the slow pace of his development and, ability to find a position. There clearly have been some injuries that have, held him up where he needed to be on the field every day. It wouldn't surprise me if you're going to see kind of an evolution of George. It would be just foolish, I think, not to use him in wide receiver reverses or sweeps or things like that. I mean, it would just be silly not to do that and see where that leads. I mean, this is an offense that does have a lot of guys that can catch the football and run great patterns, have great acceleration, really smart. I mean, having Nelson Aguilar come along, I mean, I don't think they knew they were going to get a Nelson Aguilar when they're recruiting George. And obviously with George last year, it went back and forth as to where is the best place for George. I'm not sure we absolutely completely know. My thinking is with his skill set, he's a perfect example of kind of a hybrid guy with the way his muscles work, the way he, moves in space and things like that, his fine motor, skills, his hands, combination of hands and feet and things like that. I think his ability to use both of those things in ways in which he's got the top, obviously the top end speed on this team that nobody has, but he's got to get out in space like he could do in high school to take advantage of that. Doesn't happen as much in college. So I think it's probably unrealistic to look at his high school stuff and say, why isn't he doing that in college? I mean, in high school, too, you go to a Sarah basketball game, and he'd be out there, you know, power dunking basketballs. Well, he wasn't going to transfer that to college either. So I think his is just a more kind of, I don't know, use the word nuanced or whatever, but his skill set probably didn't translate directly to college football the way the other guys did. And I don't know that it should necessarily be a, you know, comparison at all times. I think it just should be about George finding what's best for George and the staff finding what's best for George. And I thought, you know, running the sweep with George was a wonderful move. I was really glad to see that. And I think that's going to be in his future to some extent. But then you saw DJ Morgan, you know, a kid with really quick bursts. You know, when people say, well, we need more, you know, speed back there. You saw Buck Allen. I mean, they've got guys that got, they have some speed, too. I think one of the difficulties this year has been the fact that, you know, when you're only running 60-some plays a game, that's just not really enough to get all those guys involved. If you're running 90 like Arizona is, you got 30 more plays to get people involved. But then the thinking, you know, that USC has is they really are trying to marshal their personnel and get through the year without injuries so that when these big games come up, they pretty much got almost everybody ready to go. So it's a difficult issue, and I'm not sure we should be making any, like, complete, absolute, final judgments about anything or anybody at this point in time.
Okay, well, that was George Farmer. There's also questions about Nelson Aguilar, another five-star recruit coming in. We've seen more of him, though, but this is from Jay in Alameda. He says, what do we know about Nelson Aguilar at this point in the season? He hasn't had that many touches, yet he's had some playing time. Do you think he will be used as an offensive weapon this year to complement the double teams on Woods or Lee? Or does he spend more time blocking and running routes to prep for next year? It seems like he'd be more used more often in kick returns or to run the slant. That's from Jay in Alameda.
Yeah, I think they're going to keep trying to find ways to get him involved. They have so much confidence in him. There is an awful lot to be confident about. You know, he's a smart kid. Again, earning their confidence is really a key, and this is not something that happens easily or quickly or whatever. I mean, he probably had it, you know, when he got here. I think, you know, one of the things, again, it's the number of plays a game. There just aren't, you know, if you don't really have enough opportunities to get the ball to Marquise and Robert at times, or your tight ends at times, or a Curtis McNeil, for example, it's just as hard to get the ball to a really, really talented freshman. That doesn't, you know, change the fact that, A, he can do whatever probably they ask him to do and could step in for either of the starters and you know, have a pretty good jump on really, you know, having a good game and feeling like you could go to him with pretty much anything you needed to go to him with. It's just a matter of, you know, opportunities. I mean, he certainly gets them in practice, and he certainly has, you know, the sense of not, you know, what are we going to get if we do this? They don't have any of that. They know what they've got in him. He knows what he can do. So I don't think it's, you know, obviously we wish people got to see him more. And it is the big downside of, you know, of only getting 48 plays, for example. I mean, they were so darn efficient and effective, you know, when you got three touchdowns on the board in 5 minutes, or you've only had the ball 85 seconds and they had three touchdowns. They actually, you know, off the clock, they ran 85 seconds in that first quarter and they already had three touchdowns.
Wow.
There just weren't enough plays, you know. I mean, there were just not quite enough plays for, you know, for everybody, to, you know, to get as many touches as this team has the ability to do. And that's one of the philosophical questions. Some people would say with this team, they would go to the talent and go to running as many plays as they could run and take a chance on the injuries. Lane's made kind of the other decision, whether that's, you know, evolving as we get into the, you know, final five games of the regular season and all that, we'll see. It showed, yes, at least this week, what we thought they were doing and what they were doing was making the transition from how they played at Washington to how they played for Colorado. And Lane said it wasn't just for Colorado. He wanted to just show that they could do that. Now, whether that means we carry that on through the rest of the year, do you try to go down to Arizona, a team that likes to get in shootouts, and try to outshoot out, you know, Arizona, you know, a team that wants to run 90 plays and running more plays than anybody. Well, we'll see. It's going to be, you know, that's the stay tuned factor for the rest of the year. Where does USC take this with, you know, two games coming up with Arizona and Oregon to, you know, hurry up offenses that really would like to get in, you know, shootouts with you.
All right. Let's go to voicemail. We got a voicemail question for her from our friend Dan. Here you go.
Hello, Ryan and Mr. Weber. This is Garrett Witt. And the question this week is, how would you characterize the impact of what Coach Kiffin said to the team right before halftime after Mr. Williams was ejected from the game, and what effect it had on the team for the remainder of the Colorado game, and then as I'm recording this, then what effect it had on them for today's practice, which would have been Monday. So hope everything's going well. Thank you. Again, this is Garrett Witt from St. Helena. Hope you guys have a nice day, and take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And, again, we want to thank Garrett for always a really good question. It's a question I asked last night to start off, and after Lane had said how much all the good stuff they did, and I said, well, let's talk about the penalties. Lane says, oh, right, it's just really good. First thing we get is the question about the penalties. But then he admitted he didn't just stop with what he did before he took him in at halftime. He said the entire halftime, never been through a halftime like that in his life. The entire halftime was just a gigantic rant about the penalties and the lack of discipline and calling it a disgrace to the university and a disgrace to the former great USC players out there. And they just went nuts. He said every coach that talked, that's all they talked about. He said, I've never been. He said, here we are leading 33-6, and all we talked about at halftime was the penalty situation. He said, and it was mostly the personal fouls, that the lack of discipline on those penalties. I guess there were four of them that just drove him over the edge. And you know, Leonard was the focus. Leonard apologized. You know, it's a story that you hear is that, you know, he got spit on. It's a hard lesson. You just have to, you know, do you grab the guy and, you know, say, hey, don't ever do that again? Or what do you do? But you can't just swing at him. And he knows that. And, it, you know, you would hope that they would take that into consideration. But, you know, when the Pac-12 was looking at it today, what you would like to also know is, and maybe what Lane said also after last night, he said, maybe we've hit the bottom, rock bottom. Maybe that's where you got to go. You know, it's and certain of these kind of, you know, various kinds of dependency issues and all of that kind of thing. They say you can't correct them until you've absolutely hit rock bottom. Well, they've hit rock bottom. They're number 120 out of 120. They're the worst penalized team. They're the most penalized team in the country. And maybe that's what it takes. For everybody, I don't know. They kind of have stopped running laps at practice. I should have probably asked the question, what about running laps at the game? And everybody think it's a penalty. You got to run a lap around the Coliseum. I don't know. I don't know where they go with this. It's that bad. It's almost overwhelming. But I think it's something they're going to be thinking about it in a different way the rest of the week from where they have been previously. Now, they brought in officials for the first time last week. They could only get three. That's the downside of having practice in the morning. There are so very few college, college-level officials available. Most of those guys have, you know, teaching, coaching, you know, professional kind of jobs that they're just not around, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning. They haven't been able to, you know, use officials at practice, whether that's a factor or not. But maybe we'll see some new thinking this week. But I think the other thing they said, Garrett, was that the captains and the team leaders really got involved with them. Because I asked Khaled after the game, you know, when does that happen? When do the team leaders just sort of take over and say, look, this is totally unacceptable. You can't do this to your teammates. Cannot. And the difficult thing was, last week at Washington, it was offensive penalties. This week, it was a lot of defensive penalties. So that it wasn't like any one thing. They got rid of the false starts with the no huddle and quick offense, although Lane said he didn't think that was the case. That was the reason why. But they disappeared. But a whole lot of other things appeared in their place. So I don't know how to affect practice. I don't think Lane does. He said he doesn't have a theory as to why is this happening. I think it'll be different. I don't know, Garrett, if I can tell you exactly how or why.
All right. Melvin had a question on penalties, too, so hopefully that answered his question there. Let's go to David. He says, I noticed there's a lot of controversy at left tackle. Andre Walker seems like a great fit with his size and strength, but maybe with a lack of practice or missing most of the spring and summer practice, do you feel that Max Wittick maybe has better technique at the position, or is he just lack in size? Do you think that Walker would be a better fit at guard or Turek a better fit at guard?
I think one of the unstated issues with Andre is he really had never played on the left side on any kind of a position, and I still don't get the sense that his stance with the left hand down or even when he's up in – in the upright stance, he just doesn't look as comfortable on that left side. And having missed, I think now we know it really hurt him to miss all the August practice that he missed. That was really difficult for him. I think the thing that you did like about Max Turk is he played a lot of different positions. He moved around. He moved around here, at USC. And I think he just seems, more comfortable in doing more, kinds of things, is the way he, took over the tight end, role and got good, graded out well for the Washington game. So you have to think that that Max may be more suited for that with his feet. I think his feet help him a lot in that case where you want to just basically maintain contact with. Very often you're up against a rush end. You're not playing against some big, big guy now. He's, he's gotten his weight back up to 280 after kind of going down really farther than I think he or anybody else wanted to see him go in that kind of adjusting to college life and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I think his future might be more there. And I think, is it a chance Andre's future might be at another spot? Yeah, I think that's possibly, the case. He looks like, he's a force straight ahead. And I just think the right hand, left hand on the ground is really an issue with him. Some guys just don't look like they get the same kind of quickness and release and force when they've got their left hand to the ground when it's their opposite hand. And that's just kind of like some guys it doesn't matter at all. They can do either one. It doesn't matter whether they're right-handed or left-handed, where they played. And some guys it does. And Andre might be one of those guys that it just doesn't seem to – it just isn't the way he sees the world necessarily so much from the left side.
Let's go back to voicemail, Dan. Here's a quick one for you.
Hello, podcast. My question is, I was looking through my 2012 guide, and I think – this next win, if that's the seventh win, would be 800 total for USC football history. Just wanted to check with you guys. Of course, I'm not counting the vacated ones because the NCAA is a joke. Thanks, guys, and fight on.
I'll be honest with you. Once they started all the NCAA asterisk stuff, I think I've kind of tossed out all the whole thought of numbers. I think they've become kind of irrelevant because people say, "Was that like real games, or is that the games that were played, or does that reflect?" As far as I'm concerned, if the other team doesn't get the win, if you didn't cheat, for example, so that you won a game you weren't supposed to win, and so the win doesn't go to the other team, Somebody had to win the game. Play the game, somebody won. If you say, well, you can't count that game, I'm not counting them. I'm just not counting them at all. So where that is in terms of the numbers, I think I couldn't put that farther down on my list of things to even think about, because, well, is that the real 800, or is that the, you know, the one with the asterisk and all that? And I'm just not going there. That's all. I'm just, because then you got to explain it. Well, yes, he really won this many games, but because of the no, not going to do that.
Yeah, the official release that Tim Teslo and the SID sent out did say it's $799. They're going for 800, but I assume the real number, like Dan said, I think whatever, how many games were 14 or 15 or something, so it's probably like 814. But
yeah,
what the release is now is saying 799.
It's all discussion. It's written by a lawyer or something, you know. And
right.
I just can't go there.
Nice.
So they won a lot of games. They're in the top 10, like, you know, where they belong probably, and that's good enough for me.
Okay, we got one last one for you, Dan. This is from Fast Eddie. He said, "I was really glad we attacked the middle of the field against Colorado in the passing game. It was open, like it has been for most of the season. Do you think Coach Kiffin now realizes that he realizes that and will use that part of the field more often, or is that just a one-game fluke and we'll go back to the bubble screen, five-yard passes to the sidelines against Arizona? I was also glad to see we got Devon Flournoy, his first reception of the season. Hope we start sharing the wealth around this amazing group of wideouts that this team has, including George Farmer, who we obviously already talked about. Fast Eddie."
Well, Fast Eddie, I'm not sure Coach Kiffin would agree with you. I think they basically saw that here's Colorado. They're going to come up, and they're just still going to play us man a lot of the time. And thank you, Colorado. They just don't, you know, they don't do a lot of zone. And with three wide receivers in, Colorado's going to probably have to play a nickel man. And so USC kind of felt they had an advantage almost wherever they went with the ball. And whoever they went with it, you know, too. Most teams aren't going to do that. Now, if you said, well, everybody from now on is going to play them the way Colorado played them, it wasn't so much, you know, just the personnel situation. It was how Colorado played them. Most teams haven't allowed USC to kind of do that in terms of just allowing USC to come up and run the plays. Blah, blah, blah. Now, I think, you know, my feeling is more USC could force the action and go to their strengths more, and not give in, and I don't say that in a really totally negative way, but not give in to the coverage and not totally be a counterpuncher. I would like to see USC force other defenses, even whether they're playing, you know, cover two with the safeties, you know, clouding the, you know, the wide receivers and all that kind of thing. I kind of like USC to try to approach it more the way they did Saturday than the way they did against Stanford or Washington or whatever, and concede some things. But I don't think they would agree, the coaches would agree, that it was just discovering the middle of the field or discovering, you know, oh, we can throw the ball again. A lot of it was, you know, the matchup with Colorado. Now, Lane said it wasn't all that. He said they wanted to come out and show that they could really throw the ball on this game, this day, and for all kinds of reasons that we know. They were back home. They had the big records sitting there waiting to be gotten and all that kind of thing. And they needed, after the Washington game, obviously everybody needs kind of a pick-me-up. But I think that's one of the really interesting questions is what does this do in terms of the philosophy for the rest of the year? There are some of us who might wonder, is this more of an NFL approach where basically every week is kind of you try to take advantage of the on the margins of what the other team gives you? Or do you take, you know, an approach where you say, you know what, we got way better receivers than they got secondary guys. We don't care what defense they're in. We're going to make them adjust to us. We'll see. I mean, that's been kind of the issue here. And they probably hit it way wrong in the Stanford game. And it's sort of in a state of flux a little bit here in terms of, you know, where does this USC team, come down on all these games that really, really matter? What USC team shows up? Good question. Stay tuned.
Yeah,
and try to find if any of them are on the Pac-12 network. Good luck.
Yeah. one last thing, Dan, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your thoughts where this team is heading into Arizona, the last real road game outside of Los Angeles. Obviously, a tough team that runs a lot of plays, like you mentioned, a top five offensive team, certainly different than Colorado. Where do you think USC is now heading into this game?
Well, I think that's it's a really good question. I mean, on my projected schedule, this was the trap game always, no matter how. I didn't know, it's before the season, before they played a game. This was the one I said, I don't know. I know they had great success 2 years ago going down there and just taking the ball away. And, that was a pretty good Arizona team. And they just gave the ball to Mark Tyler like 40 times or whatever it was. And they didn't let Arizona in that game. They basically said, we're not going to let you play. And the Arizona crowd kind of just sat there and went, oh, no, they're not going to let us play. They're going to keep the ball the whole time. Now, I know there are people who say that was not a good thing necessarily because they thought they could also do that against Notre Dame and 2 years ago and didn't exactly work. So I don't know. I really don't know. Did they go in? I tried to ask Lane last night and didn't completely give an answer. Do you go in and say, hey, we got to score, 45, 50 points, and we should be okay. If they're hot or not hot or whatever, we'll be okay. I don't know. I'm not sure. I know on defense, I know USC, they allowed, even though they didn't let them score a touchdown, they allowed Colorado to run 85 plays. And they made, they forced them into 6 turnovers, or they didn't force all of them, but they forced a lot of them. And I don't know if you can depend totally on forcing turnovers. I'd like to force them to punt, third down, stop them. I mean, I'm not crazy about, they gave them 6 third down conversions Saturday. That's probably too many for a team like Colorado. And you can't give Arizona that many, I don't think. So, but, from my standpoint, you would think you're going to take the matchup of, USC's offense is far superior to Arizona's defense, especially against the pass. They won't be able to get to Matt, you have to project, and that he'll have time to throw the ball, and you can throw the ball deep, and you can really put up some points. And then you have to give them bad plays with the defense and really force them to punt the ball. That would be my thinking. I think USC set up that they could do that. I'm not sure they will do that on defense. I don't know. I watched a lot of NFL games yesterday, and I watched a lot of teams score in the last 2 minutes. I mean, a lot of the games yesterday, you saw both teams score in the last 2 minutes, drive the field, score. And I'm thinking, man, what this NFL philosophy? I'm not so sure about the way they play end of the game on defense. Doesn't seem to stop anybody. That's kind of, I would like to see USC just go after them both ways, say our personnel is better than yours. We can do more things well than you can do. And we'll see what happens rather than trying to be too smart by half and trying to figure out all the margins and all the angles. Just kind of turn it over to your players and say, go get them, boys. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's my thinking.
Yeah, it makes sense, Dan. All right, well, great.
But we don't know that. That's why it's, stay tuned. 12:30, early, bright and sunny, and it's on ESPN and ABC. We'll see how that breaks down. But you will be able to watch it.
Yeah, it could be hot out there in the desert. We'll have to see how USC plays. Hot or cold, I don't know. All right, Dan, well, thanks again for coming on the show. It's always great to get your insights of what's going on. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy the trip to Tucson. We'll talk to you next week.
And I guess the key is, will we enjoy practice Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday?
We shall see. Thank you for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you all next week on the show.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.